Get ready. This is going to be a professional performance.
She looked in the window and then peeped through the keyhole. Seeing nobody in the house, she lifted the latch.
This is the Grimcast.
Welcome back to the Grimcast.
Our guest today is the Kate Burton.
Today is all about Grimm Episode 2, Bears Will Be Bears, based on the story of the Three Bears, a.k.a. Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Bits, will you read the synopsis for this episode?
A case of breaking and entering introduces Nick and Hank to a mysterious family whose cultural background blurs the line of right and wrong. Meanwhile, Nick tasks Monroe with safeguarding Aunt Marie.
This was like one of our hornier episodes. Did you guys notice? Because we did not have a lot of sex on our show. I was taken aback by that. That was the first thing. I was like, oh.
No, I know. Plus like the hot kind of coral matching lace panty set on,
yeah.
On Gilda. Do we notice?
On Gilda.
Yeah. Gilda.
And Amy Gumenick, by the way, she, who is so great and does such a phenomenal job in this wild episode, I was her SAT tutor.
Shut up.
In LA. Yeah, that was that was one of my first jobs out there. And I would drive to the Palisades and tutor her on her SATs. I think she's maybe a UC Santa Barbara, maybe.
Wow. But that is really, really funny.
Yeah,
what a small world.
Such a sweetheart.
I know. Well, also, I was watching the show last night and the son, I was like, hey, what's up? You're kind of like, what's up? You're sort of like really hot.
He was, he like had a real, swarthy, kind of salty. He looked like a bear.
He looked like a bear.
They always like, well, this is Donna who cast the show, who we'll have on at some point. I always thought that the guest actors who were Vesson really had elements of the animal in them. Like Curry Graham, who was playing, and the woman who was playing Mama Bear, who like, she survived that impaling.
Wait. Girl,
was that weird to you? And then she's just like continuing to nag her children.
She's a babe too.
No, she had 12 6-inch stakes going through her heart, her lungs, and her spleen. And I'm sorry. Yes, there's magic involved, but that was some bullshit. Like,
she's just being rolled away.
What?
I mean, I don't know, guys.
Well, also, I love that, like, what I learned from the episode also was, like, when you're rich, you just throw wine glasses into the fire. Like, when you're really rich, you just throw your Riedel, I can never say it, into the fire. I was like, oh.
And then run upstairs and get on your lingerie, your two-piece. Yeah.
There was a lot of chest in this one. We saw David's chest. We saw a lot of male chestal.
Even Nick and Juliet had some steamy steaminess, which, you know.
Totes steamy. There was a close-up of you guys kissing. I was like, hi, friends. I'm right here with you. Are you kissing? Because I'm watching you kiss. Lots of horny action on the show. Claire, it's so funny.
Well, I was just because I was thinking how out of character. I mean, I guess we had a few episodes that were sort of vampy. But
yeah, not a ton of sex.
Not a ton. Yeah.
Everyone was too stressed out from running from demons.
Yeah.
Well, we will not make you wait any longer for our guest. Let's bring on Aunt Marie. Kate Burton is here.
Hi, girls.
Kate.
Bitsy.
Oh my gosh.
Claire Bree. How are you?
Oh my God. Queen in the house.
Oh, it's so good to see you.
Claire, you work with my sister Amy, I think.
All the time. She saves my life.
So my sister Amy, Christopher, has a wonderful business called The Tape Room, and she puts fabulous actresses like Claire on tape for whatever they're auditioning for, putting themselves on tape for.
Small world.
Yeah, seriously.
She's the only person I trust.
I actually think you've talked about her, Claire.
Yeah. Yeah, uh-huh. She's so good. She's my self-tape person. She's my therapist.
I was in Vancouver last spring for 3 months, and every Sunday night, my sister would put me on tape for something.
One of the first questions that we have for you, actually right out of the gate, is, you know, you come in this show, you are tasked with the entire mythology of a series resting on your capable shoulders. But I don't know that anyone else could have done that.
Well, I was just laughing with Todd about my hair experience or lack of hair experience. I mean, mostly I remember being asked to do it, and it was described to me as an older lady ninja. And I laughed so hard and I was like, wow, okay. And I mean, I don't even remember how many years ago it was, but I think I still have like a little pinch that happens in my hamstring from the fight sequence. But you know what? It was so much fun. Mostly the exhausting part was not the acting or even the fighting. It was sitting in the trailer getting that bulk head on.
It looked good though.
It was really good. So, you know, it was so fun for me. I had never done anything like that. And then, you know, and I just assumed that my stunt double would do all the fighting, and she did most of the fighting, but I did a lot of the fighting.
Are you serious? You look incredible.
We practiced in the gym at the hotel. Remember that crazy hotel?
The Hotel Lucia.
Right. We practiced in the gym. And I remember there was a basketball team that was in town and they were in the gym trying to do their workout. And we were doing play practice for the fight, running around the gym.
Oh my gosh. I mean, Kate, we talk about this a lot. We are so blessed to have had you.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I mean, your deep earth just grounded. I mean, it just was like boom. And also, we talked with David last time, was the family became the launching off point for the whole series, which really gives it such a foundation.
What was so wonderful about the show was that obviously, you know, the genre that it was for me was something that I had not really experienced before, except for like Big Trouble in Little China, which was my first movie. So, you know, that was the other time I did like metaphysical stuff. But also you guys, meeting all of you, getting to know Silas and everybody. And I feel like, you know how there are certain casts that you're in where you just like, I see you guys and I'm like, oh, hey, how's it going? You know, you just bond. It was a bonding thing. And also Portland was so cool. What an interesting place. And then, you know, when I returned without the bald cap, then I was just telling Todd that the most incredible thing was, you know, I said, so who plays the mom? And they said, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, who is one of my oldest friends. So we hadn't seen each other in, I'm not kidding, like 20 years when we saw each other again in Portland to do Grimm. So that was amazing. You know what I mean? So it was just the gift that kept on giving. It was great.
Okay, I can't believe I didn't write this down. First of all, I've watched Big Trouble in Little China probably 22 times. I have elementary age kids.
Cute.
I was like, I have to share this with them. And I forgot that you were in it. And I just watched it like a month ago. And
I know. It's my first movie. And here's the amazing thing. I got to share this with you. It was my first movie. And I was shooting it in Soundstage 5, which I didn't even know at the time, at Fox. And I went to do an episode of Modern Family a few years back. And, you know, now they have the plaques and they say what's been shot in every soundstage, which, you know, I never knew. And I'm walking by this thing and I look at the plaque and it says, these are the movies that have been made in the soundstage. And Big Trouble in Little China was one of them. But get this, then I'm looking down the list of movies and then it said My Cousin Rachel, which was my father, Richard Burton's first movie.
Oh, wow.
So I did not know until I was doing Modern Family, my episode, that I had shot my first movie in the same soundstage where my dad shot his first movie. I mean, it was like this seismic moment. I took photographs. I was like, oh my God, I stood there, held onto the walls. It was just incredible. You know, so these things, I'm older than all you girls. I mean, that's kind of what happens, is that you start to, looking back, I've been doing this now for 40 years, you know, and I just kind of can't believe it. But what's thrilling, and I can say this, is that every year, including Grimm, and Grimm was like the first time I'd ever experienced that kind of putting on a ball cap, fighting, doing fights with ogres, fighting an ogre. Never done that before.
With post-it notes.
With post-it, yeah. I know. Laughing with Bitsy and Claire and David. You know, I mean, it was just really a treat. Really a treat. And then having Todd and Sean, you know, there on the set making us laugh was just fantastic. So it was a really cohesive experience and the genuine artistry and craft and fun. I'm so happy to be a part of it.
You keep talking about the bald cap and we want to know exactly how long did it take for you to go through the bald cap and the wound makeup?
4 hours in the chair. Four.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, that's a lot. And then all the time to take it off.
Taking it off was the worst.
Yeah.
Because you had all that gunk in your hair.
Yeah.
Oh man.
You know, and then I have like little fine hair, some of which was like in my hair.
Oh man.
So yeah,
Like ripping your hair out.
Yeah. So getting it on was sort of a zen thing. Of course, I had so much overtime. Thanks, Todd.
But yeah, because you're working 14 hours and then 4 hours for the on and probably an hour for the off and nobody's going home.
Yeah. And, you know, I do remember from my own experience and watching other people go through it, getting there and doing it is great because it's sort of like you're just so zen. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I didn't have to get there at 2:30 in the morning like some people do. You know, I would arrive and I could sleep.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's on your head. So it's kind of like a little nice massage.
And the guy who did it was this extraordinary fellow. I did the pilot and then I came back and I did like an episode. And then I know we did the last thing. But then, you know, there were all these clips of me endlessly. So everybody would say, I saw you on Grimm last night. And I was like, which clip did you see? But I always teed it up. I had it on my little television, cute, all teed up. So I watched all the episodes. I loved watching the show.
Do you remember feeling anything different from the cast and crew or the environment, starting with the pilot and then coming back months later for this Bears Will Be Bears episode?
You know, actually, it was a lot of the same people. You know, obviously you guys. You know, I was amazed at how many people I remembered. I never forget a face. So in terms of crew, you know, I'm getting to that age now where, of course, I'm working with crew people over and over and over again in different projects.
Well, it's easy to not forget the Portland crew because they're all so nice.
So nice. But, you know, when I came back, wasn't there that weird snowstorm, that freak snowstorm?
We were just talking about that. Yeah.
Snowpocalypse.
Yeah, snowpocalypse.
I think that was our only snow day.
Yeah.
I like went to work and they're like, no, everybody has to go home.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
But funnily enough, I've been in a few shows where I've been there right at the beginning and I've come back at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always great to have that experience, you know?
Yeah.
Kate, you have worked in the Shondaland universe. And well, I'm done with Inventing Anna because I finished it in like 2 days. It's so juicy. And like in Grimm, too, you are given this role where you have a lot of information. It's a little wild and you're so grounded and you buy into what you're doing so immediately. But what is that like and how did you first meet Shonda? Because it feels like she's created this sort of repertory theater on TV and it's incredible.
It's incredible. I mean, in fact, I think I was already doing Grays way before I met you guys. Yeah. So 18 years ago, no, it's now my husband just retired from Center Theater Group. So he's been here for 17 years. I've been here for like 15, 16 years. Anyway, 18 years ago, I got a call from my agent, as we all do, saying there's a new show. It's a medical show. It's called Surgeons. And they want to see you for the mother of the leading lady and sit down for a minute. She has early onset Alzheimer's. And I was like, I'm 46 years old. I'm now 64. I'm 46 years old. Really? Already with the early onset Alzheimer's? Anyway.
But also, like, how much older than Ellen Pompeo were you? And you probably did the math and you were like, do I really look like I could be Ellen Pompeo's mom?
But by the way, that's what all of we're going through.
Of course. No, Ellen and I laughed. I said, oh, how old is the, you know, and by the way, she hadn't even been cast yet, I don't think. And then when she finally was, I said to my manager, so how old is Ellen? And I forget what he said, like something, oh, mid-20s. It's like, no. Anyway, but that's the classic thing, you know, is your children are like very elderly. There's no way you could have ever had them. Anyway, so that was it. So I actually auditioned for, I waited for 1 hour for my audition because Kyle MacLachlan was having an audition for a very long time. And then he came out of the audition and a lot of pissed off actors were sitting there, you know.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
And in the process of it, I was meant actually just to meet on it, which was so weird because I wasn't really in a position at that point where I was just meeting people. But, you know, I had an hour to wait. So I read the little scene and I said the same thing like 6 times. So I'm like, well, no problem. I'll just read. So he came out and we watched him come out and then we watched them bring him back in again. We were like,
oh no.
Anyway, it was hilarious. I laughed with Shonda. I know what everybody about this. And then I went in with, you know, no makeup on and my little flowery dress. And I just said, hey, why don't I just read this actually? Because you know what?
I've been waiting for an hour.
You know, and here was the director, Peter. Betsy Beers, who is Shonda's producing partner, and this lovely African-American woman, Shonda Rhimes, who had just one little tiny movie. She graduated from USC a couple of years before,
right.
Very shy. And so I said, let me just read it for you. And you know, you all know, you three know what it is when you read the scene for the thing. for the director or whatever. In the old days when we used to go in person. And yeah. you just know. And I knew, and I was like, dear God, they're going to cast me in this part. Heaven help us.
Was that a relocation for you?
I knew I was moving to LA because my husband was going to run the Center Theater Group.
Was it that year?
It kind of was a year and a half before. So I came out here, and I remember my daughter was not feeling well, and she was five, and I left her within the care of my friend's teenage son. And I was like, please just, you know, be with Charlotte, my daughter, you know, and I'll be right back. And that was it. And this is what I tell all my students at USC is I had done a lot of stuff up until then, a ton of theater, lots of television in New York, little bit of TV out here, few movies, not a huge amount. You know, I was a working actor and I still am a working actor. And the truth of it is that you go into one random audition and 18 years later, you're still playing the role. And 18 years later, you've also played two other roles for the same creator and watched this young woman become who she's become. And so proud of her, like tears in my eyes. And I mean, for me, when I saw her on the cover of Time magazine the other day, I was just like, I'm so proud of her. I'm so proud of Shonda Rhimes for doing what she does and telling these amazing stories with female protagonists, you know, creating these roles for women. And everyone is a total surprise. I mean, Ellen Pompeo and Sandra Oh and Chandra Wilson. I mean, they've created some of these indelible female protagonist characters. And then Kerry Washington and all the wonderful extraordinary women in that, and now Julia Garner and Anna Chlumsky, you know, and who knew that that was going to be her next thing? And so, you know, through it all, I did say to her at the Scandal rap party, you know, Shonda, just want to say, kind of your good luck charm. Just saying, kind of your good luck charm. And she went, you are my good luck charm, said she. And so then when I got the call about inventing Anna, I went, I thank you. And we sat together and it was, again, very moving for me, having known her for so long.
Yeah, I mean, to go from the flower dress and no makeup to...
To Nora Radford. And that's the thing is that inventing Anna, you know, we all have like our episode, you know, those of us who aren't either Anna. It was an incredible experience. And, you know, as actors, we're so darn lucky whenever we connect with anybody.
Yeah. That's why we're doing this still, because we can't quite get rid of each other.
And to be honest, never did I think that at this age, at 64, I would still be getting to play such interesting parts. And that's what's so thrilling. And every year, just like when I did Grimm, I do something I've never done before. And that happens every year.
That's what's so wonderful about just being your fan. I mean, even just turning on the TV last night, I'm like, oh, there's a new Kate I get to see. I'm so excited. But with Aunt Marie, which is so funny, everyone in the fandom of Grimm refers to you as Aunt Marie because, you know, it's a family.
I know. Well, I mean, and people would always say to me when they would go to Comic-Con and they go, I went in your trailer.
No, I mean, you were the show.
I mean, it's you. It begins and ends with you.
Yeah.
Well, it was labor of heaven.
Wait, I want to go back to these stunts because I rewatched the second episode, Bears Will Be Bears, last night. And have I said the title enough? You know, I can say it like one more time.
I love the titles, by the way. I always enjoy all the titles of Grimm. I love those titles.
Well, this one was fun. But I don't know if I have ever seen an actor be completely frozen in a bed and scare the shit out of me at the same time. Like, you're a badass in this episode because you have cancer. And you are like completely immobile in a hospital bed and you annihilate like the energy. But that priest stunt scene, was that you? I mean, with some stunt people, obvi. But that was like really legit.
It was great the way they did the stunts. The stunts were extraordinarily well done, I thought.
When you're hopping around to all these different things, like, is there a thing that you do to kind of click in really quickly, or is your approach to everything, does it change, you know, depending on the job?
It changes. One of the things that we did, you know, well, of course, because of COVID. You remember COVID.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we started inventing Anna in the winter of 2019.
Wow.
And then I was told, oh, yes, and you'll be doing the rest of your scenes. I did like two little tiny scenes in 2019 winter. And then you'll be doing the rest of your scenes in April of 2020.
Yeah.
So what happened was I did arrive to have my wig fitting in a pandemic. And I remember thinking, I'm flying to New York to have a wig fitting in a pandemic, by the way. And the day that I was there, which was March 12th.
Oh, geez.
Yes.
During the wig fitting, they said, we're shutting down. And so then I returned the following October. So I suddenly had to go. And so the COVID protocols for Venting Anna were the first ones I experienced, and they were excellent. I think in response to your question, you know, let's be honest, ladies, so much happens with hair and makeup and the costume meeting. And once you get that established, like for me, it's like 60%. And the one thing that I was very happy about is I did a couple of other things. I'm in the show, The Dropout. And oh, I look like hell. Oh my God. But on purpose. I'm married to the British scientist, played by Stephen Fry, with Amanda Seyfried playing Elizabeth Holmes. It's about Theranos and Elizabeth Holmes.
I was Elizabeth Holmes for Halloween.
I know, you look really good too.
It was an incredible experience, but I had let my own white hair grow out during COVID, and it was still in place at that time. So I did a whole scene where the roots were grown out, and I was like,
"Oh, that's
yeah,
sweet.
Baby,
that's yeah."
No, so I was after playing Nora Radford. I mean, what a joy! I mean, I never get to play glamour gals like that.
You were just delicious.
Like, oh,
I
loved it so much. Every time they put a costume on me, I was like, I'm "So happy!"
It's just so good.
Yeah, it was great. You know, and this is the thing that we love to do as actors: is we love to just jump around and play all different kinds of things. And so that was what was exciting. So in those situations, particularly with The Dropout, which was not as voluminous as Nora Radford, that I just thought, okay, you know, I've got to make some really sharp decisions because my character is like these dabs of paint in a scene. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was just also really fat. And I worked with amazing actors, Stephen Fry and Laurie Metcalf.
I love
Maisie. Come on.
So going back to Grimm, was there anybody or anything that inspired Aunt Marie? Or were you just sort of like, this is a new pilot, I can make her my own and I'm going to do my own thing?
You know, I think more the latter. Though I will tell you, because we started that in 2011, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we shot the pilot. I think we flew up to Portland in mid-March 2011. We wrapped mid to late April.
Right.
Sort of, yeah.
So in that time, I'd had a personal loss, which was my wonderful stepmother, Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh, wow.
You remember my stepmother was Elizabeth Taylor?
Oh,
yes.
My God.
So she had just died. And I thought about her a lot. I thought about her a lot while I was lying in the bed. So that was kind of a really vibrant time for me work-wise. I was starting to direct in the theater and with the Los Angeles Philharmonic. And you know what, guys? I think that during that, I had just done the pilot of Veep. Weirdly. And
oh
you
my
know,
God.
It was unbelievable. I'd done the pilot of Veep. I'd done a couple of episodes of the first season of Scandal. I remember there was actually, I think, some sort of article about the fact that I was in all these shows that were starting out, and they were all such interesting and vibrant shows, including
and
Grimm.
Also so different.
So different.
And Veep is one of my favorite shows.
Well, Veep is amazing. But the truth of it is, it was a very vibrant time for me. But so when Aunt Marie came along, I was like, yes.
Yeah.
She's a beast.
Total beast. She's a BA. She's a beast.
But also vulnerable.
Yeah. And loves her nephew so much. Wants to protect her nephew so much.
There was a moment that I actually rewound three times. It's when David's in there and you guys are connecting, but he's mentioned something where he's like, you're going to back out of the whole thing and you grab his arm and you just say no. But like the way, like, I had rewatched, I was like, damn. She's so good. Like, just the way you just like grabbed him, like with such few words you had, we were able to understand the entire world of the past and the present of just the lore of the show. I mean, just really was an important element.
Well, this is the thing. And also, if I may say, that the actors on the show were also wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you three and David, and please give him my love, by the way, and Silas and, you know, everybody else. I mean, everybody was excellent. And it was honestly, it was real actors, you know, if I may be so bold.
That's so nice.
And, you know, sometimes you do some shows and you're like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to get through this. And I've had a few of those, not a ton, I'm happy to report, but where you're doing scenes with folks and you're like, oh, my goodness, we just have a different approach.
That's so kind. Oh, my goodness.
She said diplomatically. But, you know, David, honestly, we really connected. It was so dear. And I sort of love that thing. I also loved being with all of you from the beginning because it's always exciting when something's creating for the first time and you're creating this cast of characters, this story. I mean, so many people love the show so much. So, you know, and it was great when I would love when people recognize me. I would be like, how do you recognize me? I just need to understand with my little fluffy hair. But they were like, oh, Graham, you know, so it sort of reminded me, to be honest, about the way people would respond to Big Trouble in Little China in a lot of ways. Because, you know, that came out and it's this cult classic. But, you know, when it came out the same weekend as Aliens. So it was rough for us because Aliens was just this behemoth and Big right. Trouble kind of was like cute, adorable. So the fact that it's had such nice staying power was so great. So the fact is that people responded to it and responded to Grimm in a very similar way. They just loved the characters and they loved the story, which let's face it, we're all storytellers. That's what we're doing.
That's so true because you're working in a particular fan base that is lifetime. I mean, look at me. I'm 45 years old and I could quote the entire movie of Big Trouble in Little China. I mean, like, so that's what's just really fun to play in these arenas.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And, you know, ultimately what people love about sci-fi, but especially these kinds of shows where a lot of it feels like real life and then suddenly poof, you know, things happen. The fire flies out of here. You know,
people love it.
They really love it. And I get it. I totally get it. But it's been a joy. So I'm so happy to have been with you, girls.
Oh my gosh, Kate, we are so grateful.
You are just the best.
Legend. Legend.
Aunt Marie.
Yes, yeah. Grimm and then Aunt Marie. That's it.
It's always in my biography. Well, I got to put in Grimm.
Amazing. Well, I hope to see you on stage. I missed your last show here in LA. You're going to be back.
I don't know. I'm actually, I do like one play a year. So that was the play. And I probably will do something like maybe next year.
Okay.
The rest of this year will be sort of organizing my life and spending more time in New York. And then we'll see what happens. Who knows? And by the way, whoever knows? I don't ever know. I mean, I could be in a play next fall and I wouldn't even know.
That's the best.
Yeah, I mean.
That's why we do it.
That's why we do it. Well, Claire, I will see you in New York. Bitsy, maybe I'll see you in Vancouver. Give my love to David.
I will.
And Bree, it was lovely to be with you. Well, listen, good luck with this. This is so much fun.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.
What a treat. So happy to see you. Take care.
Legend.
Oh, she is just the best. You know what is so amazing about Kate? Well, there are many amazing things about Kate, but she has such a rich body of work, works all the time, is just one of the greatest actors that we have. And she has zero artifice. Like, she is so right there with you all the time. I mean, this was like here now and on set. Yeah, she's just so generous.
I do love, however, that she like geeked out a little bit about, like, you know, my dad, Richard Burton, or, you know, my stepmom, Elizabeth Taylor.
I was like, yeah. It's wild. I mean, it is just wild.
Bitsy, did you shoot anything with Kate in this episode? I can't remember.
I did in the pilot.
In the pilot.
Yeah. I just remember when we were shooting the pilot and when she was cast, everybody was so excited because of who she is and like her family lore of like the whole Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor connection. And then I just remember she was so cool. But yeah, I came in and she was like sitting at the dining room table. And then I'm like, hey, your aunt's here. So I worked with her in the pilot, but not in this episode. But she was lovely. She's incredible.
Also, your hair color was really, really vibrant this episode. I liked it.
Oh my God.
Oh, you know what? Yeah. Because there was time between the pilot and this. So it looked different to me.
Yeah.
Was it different?
They dyed it red, right?
Yeah. They had to bleach it and then dye it red because my hair is so dark. And that's why by the time we hit season 3, I was saying to basically Jim and David, our show creators, I can't do it anymore. My hair is going to fall out.
You look good in that color though.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it again though. It wasn't bad. It was cute. In hindsight, I'm wondering like, should I have just done a wig and not put my hair through having to get bleached and then dyed as often as I did.
How did you guys feel? Since, you know, I'm a fan here until episode 15 and then it's all about me. But what was your experience going from making the pilot into doing episode 2, which I noticed was with Bert. Bert directed this episode.
For me, it was mainly just really exciting. And also, as excited as I was so confident in the quality of the material and just Jim and David's vision for the show, David Greenwalt, that I wouldn't say I was surprised. I was so happy. I was so excited to get to move to a new city. I'm 30. It was exciting, but there was a little bit of like, of course this is going to series.
And you guys all relocated to the Wyatt dormitory, most of you, right?
Yeah. And then Fred Armisen lived in the building. couple of the cast of Leverage lived in the building. I mean, I ran into more famous people when I moved to Portland than I ever did in, you know, the 10 years I'd been in LA prior or whatever.
And I was only booked for those two. And then they didn't know because I was recurring. So you'd have to just wait and wait and wait.
No, you and me were the Lucia gals.
Yeah. And I was at the Lucia with Kate. And she's a riot. I loved working with her. So I just loved being around her. She just had that feeling of like, I want to soak up all of this energy and all of this. Gosh, she had so much patience, which is so hard sometimes at work, especially when you've been there a million hours and you're just sitting around most of the time.
But you know, that's why she's a really, really talented actress, is she's fully present in the moment. I mean, even in the Zoom call.
That, talking about sitting in that waiting room, waiting to read for Grey's Anatomy, and instead of being filled with rage, which is what happens to me, and I'm just so indignant and like, fuck you, like, I've been waiting, and now my, like, mojo is drained out, and I'm going to get in there and be dry and cold. And she's just like, you know what? I'm going to take this time to really read the story and get into the vibe and just go in there and knock socks. Yeah, she's just epic.
Well, especially, you know, being actresses. That's a career I want.
That's it.
You know, just working.
That is it. Yeah.
Just working, kicking around, working, yeah. Just doing really great work each time, fully as committed as possible. I mean, like, that's the blueprint right there.
Yeah. Claire, there's so much mystery with your character and what she's doing with Captain Renard, played by Sasha Royce, without giving away too much. How much did you know, if anything, about how that relationship was going to play out?
I didn't. The only thing that they told me was, you are sort of like an assassin for this organization. And there wasn't any information further than like who the organization was or who everybody was working for. Just like, you are kind of a hired gun.
Because they probably didn't know. In fact, I know they didn't know.
They definitely didn't know.
Yeah, there was a little bit flying by the seat of your pants by the time we got into the, yeah.
Yeah.
Another moment I rewatched was when you're underneath one of the bridges and that hoodlum comes up and is like, yeah, gets a switchblade and says, get out of my turf.
Who looks so mild-mannered. Like,
look like he works at Barista on 23rd. Yeah. But when you walk away from Sash to go eat him.
What does he say? How much money are you going to give me to not hurt you or something like that?
You looked really good. No, like, that's what casting you in that role is so brilliant, because you're this tiny, petite, stone cold killer bitch.
An apple box. How many? Yeah, two apple boxes I needed for Sasha.
Now, that was a great scene. I loved it. I loved it. Man. Again, I know I talk a lot about hair because I'm envious of both of your hair, so I must talk about it. Your hair also looked really good in this episode.
Not extensions.
Those weren't extensions.
No, no.
I could tell. You also have Barbie hair, so I wasn't that surprised.
It's good genetics, but that's my best quality, is my ability to grow hair.
You do have a good hair.
But Bits, I had a thing with them about my hair too. They wanted it white, white, white blonde, and my hair is just not. It's kind of reddish. It's not that color. And so I would have to sit there and get my hair colored for 4 or 5 hours.
Your hair was in color too?
Yes.
Yeah, it looked really blonde.
Because they needed it white. And actually, this is Lynn. When we have Lynn on, I'm pretty sure this was her obsession. Like, it has to be white, white blonde.
Like Khaleesi hair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And my hair is red, like reddish. So it gets brassy.
Strawberry
and she wanted
blonde.
It white. Yeah. And instead of just bleaching it, it had to be highlighted, like individually foiled. So I'd sit there.
Oh, the worst.
And just be there all day. Were any, no, Brie, you weren't there. For the arm rip off, for Silas ripping that guy's arm off.
That scene is so great.
That surprised me again.
That scene is great. But again, you know, it's just like right when the tone is going in too much of a literal direction, something makes a hard left. And then you remember, oh, you're in grip, you know?
Right. Because Silas just.
But then his reaction. He's so good in those scenes.
I know. And the establishing of Pilates in this episode.
Very good.
Hilarious.
Noberto did direct this. I thought that one shot where he comes up into frame.
Yeah.
Just such good comedy.
It's great.
It makes me laugh every time. By the way, that is, to me, one of the most memorable shots of the show, probably because it is a bit of a departure from the other ones because it is so cheeky.
Yeah.
But I love that shot.
I feel like right when you're like, oh my God, this show is really gruesome, or this show is, you know, then every time you cut to a Monroe space, it's as if the world becomes a little bit tilted, you know, but it's so unconscious, but it's what your body needs to get through the next gnarly, heinous scene you're about to watch.
Yeah,
that's a good way to put it. It feels like a physical shift.
So that camera angle with him coming up and down with the reformer, it's like just when you need a little likeness.
Did they ever bring back Hank's ancient weapon fetish?
I don't think they did.
The early episodes, yeah. This will be interesting to go through the things that were kind of like spaghetti thrown on the wall. Like, maybe this will be. No. Yeah.
Maybe when we run out of storylines, like halfway through season four, we can circle back to this. Yeah.
Like my drug habit, you know, never to be seen again.
Oh my God, but you were like a hot, hot mess and just like really cleaned yourself up fast. Yeah.
I'm really together now.
And it was like never really referred to again, like very briefly alluded to. And then it was like, no.
Not really.
You couldn't do that now because there is too, with the opioid crisis in America being what it is.
Yeah.
That Rosalie can come into town and just be like, you know what? I just need the love of a good man.
Yeah. You know, that was 2011. That was a long time ago. You know who was really good? I thought the dad was really good.
Cary Grant. Yeah, he's in so much stuff.
I thought he was really good. And, you know, sometimes those turns of like, I'm with you now, copper. Like that turn for him when he needs to do the right thing. He played that so well. I thought he was really great casting. So there's a cliffhanger at the end of this episode that's going to lead us to the next one. Did you guys catch that?
Yes.
The creepy craggly through the bushes peeping on you and David.
It's going to lead us right to Beware, where we find out who is spying on Nick.
Or what?
Or what?
Or what?
Okay, guys, thank you to everyone listening. We love being able to share our grim experiences with you.
You can subscribe to the podcast at apple.co/grimcast so you don't miss an episode.
To leave us a message, go to the show notes and click on the link there.
To be continued.